You're listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Susan Maples back for another podcast with my friend and co-host, Lauren Eckert. And this is a Brave Parent Podcast. And today we're talking about sleep and sleep-related breathing disorders and sleep hygiene. I laugh because I even wrote this in one of the pull quotes that says, when I look back on my college years, my mantra was sleep is overrated. We'll sleep when we die. And now I realize it should have had a few more words like, we'll sleep when we die and we'll surely die sooner if we don't sleep. And that is the truth. And it's not just about the amount of sleep, but the quality of sleep. And so from the work that I do, I recognize that we're a sleep deprived nation. And even now when we're sitting here on top of the school shooting, the horrific school shooting in Texas this week, I am just, I can't help but wonder about sleep. Because this, you know, on the cover of Time Magazine and Newsweek and all of these, they've had sleep deprived nation, how much of our violence is being contributed to by that. And so I worry, I think about it, but I also think about it in 100,000 different ways because it's physiologically, mentally, social, emotionally, cognitively, all of that is just really dangerous for us to lose the replenishing nature of sleep. It's when all of our cells rest, replenish, the digestive system gets a rest, we get a tremendous amount of cognitive benefit. All the microglial cells and the lymphatic system that cleans up the brain all functions. Without it, we end up a bit of a mess. And in a culture right now that is incredibly tolerant of sleep deprivation, we just continue to throw drugs at it, putting caffeine into everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, using Adderall and Ritalin and these stimulating drugs like they're nothing. And I am really, really disturbed about that.
You know, let's take it to like kind of more of the foundational period for those who maybe have not really thought about, you know, the impacts of sleep. And, you know, I think I might say this about every chapter of the book, but this one was really fascinating to me because a lot of times I feel like you think about, like, for example, when you're like, could sleep cause, like a lack of sleep cause all of this violence?
Yeah.
And I feel like for most people, it's going like, I mean, really could, like, you know, losing hours of sleep a night really cause someone to do something like that? But it goes so much deeper than just simply a lack of not sleeping, being grumpy, right? One day, taking things a little too, it goes so much deeper than that. And in your book, in the chapter, you brought up so many things that I had never thought about being connected before. And so
like what, Warren?
Well, the ADHD portion for one, being related to sleep.
And talk about
that. That's perfect.
Because ADHD is a big question. Maybe my child has ADHD. He's not saying focus. He can't learn well in school. He's having some emotional outbreaks. There's all of the symptoms mm-hmm. that come up for diagnosing this ADHD syndrome are the same exact symptoms of sleep deprivation. So it makes perfect sense that 37% of the time we get it wrong. And it may be even higher than that. That's just what the literature suggests. 37% of the time, it's not ADHD. It's not a brain problem. It's a sleep deprivation problem, which it ends up to be a brain problem. But how do we handle ADHD? We give them mind-focusing drugs. What are those drugs? Stimulants. What do stimulants do? They rob your child of sleep. The very cause of 37% of these misdiagnoses. Do you see how dangerous that is?
Yeah, it's terrifying. But I think something that's important to bring up, and I want to dive into ADHD even more, but, you know, but Susan, like I put my kids to bed by 7:30. They wake up at 6:30. They sleep fine. They're going to be fine. Can we talk about how we might not always know if our kids are actually sleeping the way they should be sleeping?
I actually separated breathe and sleep in this book into two distinct chapters. Most of dentistry and medicine look at sleep-related breathing disorders as an airway disorder. In other words, even the words obstructive sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. Obstructive apnea, apnea meaning no breath, we stop breathing, and we measure that through how many times an hour we stop breathing for 10 seconds or more. Obstructive meaning there's an obstruction. Apnea meaning it causes us to stop breathing, obviously interrupts our sleep, because during the day we're able to hold our airway open. But during REM stage sleep, when all of our muscles are paralyzed and we can't move, by the way, it's perfect that we can't move, because that's when we dream and we can't act out our dreams, which is a really good thing. But you see how an airway disorder shows up during sleep because of that paralysis of the muscles, and now you're having more of these episodes. But the airway disorder was there. It's a developmental issue for many, many people. And that's why we separated it into airway or breathing problems versus sleep. Sleep has a whole bunch of other issues.
And that's why I want to bring it up for those who did not catch the breathing episode before. It's a great one to go back and establish that foundation coming into potentially why your child is not sleeping the way you would assume that they would, just because they're laying in bed and they look like they're sleeping, and how that can then really impact, like you said, the behaviors and everything else we'll talk about today.
Yep. And it's interesting because we're born healthy sleepers generally. And babies wake up to eat until they have about an average of 11 pounds of body fat on them to sustain them through the night. Like, they have to have a certain amount of body fat to be able to call up some calories to keep them satisfied, right? Once they start sleeping through the night, we should have pretty good sleepers. But you know there are babies who don't sleep well from the start. What is that about? Is it an airway disorder we missed? Where are we? And so we start with normal, healthy sleep and breathing, and we progress. And this progressive nature of sleep-related breathing disorders is a real issue. And
my 4-year-old, Susan, I mean, prime example of that, ever since he was a baby, he would barely sleep. Like, and we were always like, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Well, he's 4 now. You came in my life last year, and I just learned about the airway health and could recognize that in him as a 3/4-year-old. And it all makes sense going way back to the time that he was an infant.
And as a 4-year-old, is he still bedwetting?
No.
So he's done with that.
Yes,
that's often a sign, right, of a sleep-related breathing disorder.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, sleep studies for kids are a little bit of a misnomer, because we'll talk about upper airway resistance syndrome versus obstructive sleep apnea. Maybe this is a good time to talk about it, but we seem to see a progression. And here's why. If you ever had a sleep study, most of us stop breathing at some point during the night. And the question is, how many times and for how long? Because when you stop breathing, you get what we call hypoxic. You get a definite drop in oxygen, right? And a buildup of CO2. And that can be dangerous both for the brain, because everything needs oxygen. You get brain deterioration from oxygen deprivation. That makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we get a sleep test, we measure this arbitrary amount of time, 10 seconds. 10 seconds. You have to stop breathing for 10 seconds for it to be measured as an event. And if your blood oxygen drops down a certain level, let's say you stop breathing for a lot longer than 10 seconds, now your blood oxygen really drops way down. So we take a look at those two numbers to come up with a score, mm-hmm. called an apneic hypopneic index, right? And then when kids, let's say that there's a whole group of what we call young fit females, like you, Lauren, if you were waking up tired every day, like, I don't get it. I sleep 7 to 8 hours, but I can't stand getting up in the morning. And I could literally stop at a red light and feel like I could sleep. And all day long, I'm grouchy and feel short with people. And I mean, I feel sleep deprived, but I'm getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep. There's something called, and you go in for a sleep test and it shows out, you don't have obstructive sleep apnea, or it's very mild. You may have something called upper airway resistance syndrome, where you stop breathing, let's say for 5-6 seconds, and you have an effort to breathe. Your brain makes an effort to breathe to offload the CO2 and take in oxygen. Instead of staying without breath, you literally get a breath, but it brings you back up to conscious levels of sleep. So sleep goes into deeper stages, right? It's in the deep stages of sleeping that we rest and repair, where all the function to restore our bodies and our brains take place. But if you're constantly slipping off into these little tiny apneic events that don't measure on a sleep test, and then you have an effort to breathe and you breathe, you just rob yourself from the sleep itself. So it's not the hypoxia, the lack of oxygen, that's making you brain foggy. It's the fact that you never got real sleep.
Yeah.
We need deep, restful sleep.
Yeah.
And that can be a real problem. And what I believe is that we haven't done enough research to really show this, but I believe we're going to see lots and lots of UARS in kids when we're able to measure it. Unfortunately, we don't have great ways to measure UARS at this point. We can swallow a little like pressure gauge, or we can have a sleep technician watch and measure how long you're stopping sleeping, but we don't have the gadgets and the machinery to really, really adequately diagnose UARS, upper airway resistance syndrome. And what if we did? What if we diagnosed all these kids with upper airway resistance syndrome? Well, the solution for that in adults still today is probably a CPAP. Mm. Or a mandibular advancement appliance. And neither one of those are indicated for kids. So we have a whole host of problems with kids with syndrome, like Down syndrome and other developmental issues that have literally obstructive sleep apnea and other sleep-related breathing disorders. How do we help these kids? Mm. A CPAP pushes on the face and thwarts the facial development, which is, we know, isn't good from chapter breathe. Mandibular advancement appliances, while they're growing, isn't a great way to do it either. The appliances that open the airway. So we have a lot of issues there. So it's a problem.
Yeah. It's a lot to think about as a parent.
That's a heavy subject, UARS, and I kind of introduced it early here.
No, it's great. I mean, it's important though, as again, parents to realize how real of a risk that is for our children and how that will impact them throughout their entire life. And it's so important to identify it now for those exact reasons.
Let's talk about the very frustrating way that Western medicine, our medical model, treats all of this, which is to just pump people up. You know how many people, first of all, when I'm sitting in audiences and I ask people to like stand and I start to take people down, like I want to really address our health, right? And I want to say, like, how many of you drink, if you don't drink 6 to 8 glasses of water a day, sit down. If you don't floss your teeth, sit down. If you don't wear your safety belt, sit down. If you're not exercising 5 days a week minimum for 30 minutes or less. Now, by now, most people are sitting, but I will say I have to sneak sleep in there. If you're not sleeping 7 to 8 hours a day as an adult, you're not healthy. And how many of you are, I'll say this, going to sleep without a drug and waking up without a drug? If you're taking drugs to go to sleep and wake up, sit down. Nobody sits down on that. Then I say, hello, caffeine. Because guess what? 73% of kids 6 to 12 drink caffeine, and 96% of adults. And if you ask my patients, why so much caffeine? I need it. Why do you need it? First of all, a drug that you're taking that much and that often loses its efficacy. So it's probably not very effective for you. So you perceive that you're always sleeping, you need some caffeine. Second of all, caffeine, think about this. Caffeine doesn't give you energy. You get energy from your food source. There's no source of calories there, right?
Yeah.
It steals energy from your food sources by ramping up your neurologic system, but it also wears off and lets you down, leaving you sleepier than you were before.
Yeah.
So it's a vicious cycle.
And it is interesting because as kids, they usually connect with it more for the sweetness, right? Like that's what they're doing. But the impact is, I mean, the sugar, sure, but then the caffeine too.
The caffeine is a way for the food and drug manufacturer, food and beverage manufacturers to get us hooked. Hmm. It's an addictive substance. It's a white powder. It's a drug. We yeah. put it into stuff, all kinds of stuff. And it's just a shitty way to, I guess, distract your brain. Cause it, what it does is it interrupts adenosine, which is a natural sleep hormone that your brain gives off, so that when you're sleepy, you'll sleep. Mm. If you're taking this anytime after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're in trouble. Mm. And if you've got your kids on Ritalin for ADHD, and if they're or Adderall, and if they're bi-dosing it, so they're taking an afternoon portion of this, absolutely stop, because you're interrupting their sleep quality.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to a mom at an event the other day for our kids, and she has 3 boys. And she's like, the first one, I was like, anti, you know, anything sweet, Capri Suns, no, you know, Cheetos, no, like none of that. She goes, by the time I got to the third one, cause her kids over there are like slamming a Pepsi, and he's 7 years old. Sure. And, she's like, I just don't even care anymore. And she's like, it's just fine. It's just a soda. And I'm like, here's a book. You should read this book. But I mean, like, we don't think about that, right? We don't think about the caffeine portion. It is truly in our mind. I feel like for a lot of us parents, it's thinking about the sugar, like, oh, okay, sugars, you know, like we got to limit that. No, the caffeine is important to recognize as well for that reason.
The messages we give our kids, don't talk to me before my cup of coffee in the morning. In other words, I need some drugs before we talk. Mm-hmm. Like that's you've got little addicts in training, right? They're mimics. We're teaching them how to behave.
Yeah.
So it's a real problem.
Yeah. And so, and like you said, when it comes to like sleep, especially like knowing that is actually like an interruption to our sleep, and not an aid for it.
That's right.
I think it's really important. You know, the other thing that I know we talked about related to sleep too is, you know, for my kids, like we get ready for bed, right? And I'm like, okay, empty your bladders. Like, I don't want you waking up in the middle of the night, like empty your bladders. And they resist it so much, but they usually do it. There's usually a lot there, right? Right before bed, but I don't want them getting up just to use the bathroom if they don't have to, if they could potentially be proactive. So I would love to talk about like all of that, like sleep hygiene in general, and how to really continually, you know, create that better environment for the kids to fall asleep.
It's interesting that bedwetting is a sleep symptom. And a lot of adults, even they'll say like, well, I don't wake up, and I wake up a few times in the night to pee. Well, mm-hmm. you shouldn't have to do that. Our body gives us a natural antidiuretic hormone. Mm-hmm. And when you wake up, like if you're lifting yourself up to conscious sleep, I mean, not consciousness, if you're lifting yourself up out of deep sleep, like we talked about with upper airway resistance syndrome, your bladder fills. So you're literally getting a full bladder because you're not sleeping. It's not the bladder that interrupts your sleep. It's the sleep problem that fills your bladder. So you see how that's a little tricky?
So eye-opening as someone who wakes up and goes potty twice a day, twice a night, you know.
Bedwetting for kids is that symptom. But sleep hygiene, I find this really interesting. First of all, bedtimes. Oh. I mean, I know as a mom, a working mom comes home, wants to put on a nice meal instead of just heating up a microwaved meal or ordering a pizza, right? Yeah. You've got a little time and prep involved in putting on a healthy meal and sitting down together and now you got homework to help with and you got chores and all that stuff. And you want to spend some quality time with your kids. And so what do? You postpone their bedtime because you feel guilty, mm-hmm. which I get. It's how we spend time with our kids. If that's the only time of day you have to be with your kids, that's when we do it and we rob them of sleep. So I think setting and setting bedtimes that are individual for kids, because I have in the book, like how much time does your child need to sleep, but it's not every child that needs the same amount of sleep. You know, when one of your kids needs more sleep, mm-hmm. and they actually start to like sleep because they feel better, mm-hmm. right? Waking up with an alarm clock is really a problem. If we can have kids wake up naturally before their alarm, Or we set the alarm outside of their room and go in and gently sit and wake them when they have to get up for school, and you realize they're dead tired. They need more sleep.
Yeah. Right? You know, another interesting thing that I'd like to hit on, and like kind of recent, that maybe things to experiment with, or, you know, maybe the why behind it. But I remember early on when the kids were even younger, experimenting with bedtimes, because it's always the question, right? Like, should we keep them up? Like, as they get older, do we go 30 minutes later before they go to bed, et cetera? And one thing that I remember being fascinated by at different points of their growth is that sometimes if we experimented with an earlier bedtime, they would sleep for longer. And it's like, if we try to go later, they were fighting that, right? And they were staying up. And so it was so interesting. There was this period of like really nailing that perfect. Yeah. Cause a lot of times I feel like we think if we keep them up later, they're going to sleep in later for the mornings that we need them to sleep in late. And it doesn't work that way. Sometimes if we actually put them to bed earlier, they'll end up fully getting that rest that they need. And it's very interesting how that works.
I was influenced a lot by Jim Fay. I've mentioned him several times in the book, but he said something that I'll never forget. You can't force any animal or human to sleep. You can just provide a sanctuary for sleeping and a time for sleeping. And he said that the whole idea that it's not bedtime, it's bedroom time. Mm-hmm. It's time for you to go to your bedroom. And we teach them the skills to wind down. Mm-hmm. You know, parents who get stuck in like, I'm going to sleep with you every night till you fall asleep. Now the parent falls asleep too. And then they have to wake up and start to clean up dishes and, you know, do the things that they do. And then they're sleep deprived. Like, I think it's okay to do some rituals, to sit down and like, let's put our worries away. Let's say a prayer. Let's do what we do. Let's give gratitude. Let's do our thing. We read a book together. And now I'm going to let you be. And if you're not tired, you've got a book. What we don't want is electronics, right? We don't want screen lights in their face.
Yeah.
As we'll talk about sleep hygiene in just a minute, about preparing that sanctuary. But the idea of saying it's bedroom time, that means you stay in your bedroom and go to sleep when you're ready. And I'm going to finish up my things because I need my own bedroom time. Like, I'm just going to finish up a few things and I want to get really good sleep. I value it. I can't wait. Bed is beautiful. Yes. I love my bed. I'm ready for bed.
Yes.
And you love yours, and we're going to have some bedroom time, and then you'll fall asleep when you're ready. And by providing an earlier bedroom time, you're going to get more sleep. There's no question about it. I mean, when we wind down and the lights are low and you're in a prone position and you're reading, what do? You go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So obviously they can become overstimulated by a book that they're reading, but I mean, I love books and you do too. So I think it's a good time for them.
Yeah.
To have a very dim book light if they need it. We're talking about adolescents and teenagers, but I mean, little kids.
My kids.
Yeah. They might have stuffed animals. Tell your animals a bedtime story. Tell them to go to sleep too. Like, you know, little things that kids do that they can then create a time where they're quiet and sleepy.
Absolutely. It's been a game changer for us because it does help them stay in the room, like having those little like clip lighter lights on their bed, and they love being able to control them, and they'll just read books and then they'll turn it off and they'll go to sleep. And it's been a huge game changer for us.
But not TVs.
No.
Not tablets. TVs,
nope. Nothing in there.
Otherwise, no bright screens, no stimulating. Yeah. Yeah.
And the lights are the soft lights, like enough to help them read, and that's it. And it's been huge.
And I like these little pre-bedtime routines, right? Mm-hmm. That you do that are sort of special to them. But getting into the habit of sleeping with them until they're asleep, it doesn't give them the experience that they can fall asleep on their own either.
Yeah.
I need you in my bed for me to fall asleep, which is not true.
Yes.
Right. So we need to be able to regulate that a little bit.
You know, I just want to say real quick on a note, because I know like bedtime can be super hectic for a lot of parents at the same time. It's not just always this nice wind down period. I think leaning into that as a parent too is super important to do, because the kids react differently when I'm treating bedtime like a to-do, like, okay, we have to do X, Y, Z to get to this point. And so I can go and have like my break, right? It's my mental break. Yeah. The times that I lean into, even when I'm exhausted and truly just try to appreciate the books that we read and, you know, all of the routines that we do, they lean into it. And it's just this calmer environment altogether. Yeah. So really, setting that is important as well.
And I think as you're dimming your lights, because, you know, we incandescent light, you know, Thomas Edison was not a big person on sleep. He truly believed, and I wrote about it in here, that we do better with less sleep, and he was wrong. That's okay. He was right about a lot of things.
Like, yeah, he could be wrong about something.
but you know, the whole idea that we are amping ourselves up by incandescent light, like when the light falls, we should mimic that in our homes. Put dimmers on your lights. Turn off the TV, get the bright lights out of the room. Like, let's wind down knowing that light makes a difference. And then another thing that I think is really important is stay away from violent content, even like scary stories that you tell, spooky stories. That seems to make a difference in the literature. They talk about that. We talked about caffeine. Cool the house down.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, you know, ideally we should have our thermostats about 65 degrees, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And that becomes a really nice sleeping temperature. Now, many of you go, that's way too cold for me. Put more blankets on the bed. It's true that we should be breathing in cooler air and that we should be in a cooler environment. And if you need more warmth, you can add it. But for babies, even sleeping in a room that's too warm is associated with a higher incidence of sudden infant death syndrome. So it's really important that we consider the room temperature to be a healthful. Quiet, dark. I know that we start to talk to kids. We introduce words like the boogeyman or like scary, you know. And so the idea that you'd have a light on so you could see someone makes them almost anticipate something. So night lights are not, I mean, if you feel like you need a night light or your child needs one, think about the messages you've given them. Because mm-hmm. we really do want a very dark, cool, and quiet environment for the best sleeping. So you never want to like fall asleep with your TV on. It's exactly what you don't want, right? Yes. And then one of the things that I think that is important to talk about, we're going to talk about this in probably our very next podcast, which is exercise, right? We want to make sure kids are getting enough exercise. We are wired to move. And if they haven't had adequate exercise that day, they will literally not get good sleep.
Yes.
So we need to figure out how to set good examples mm-hmm. and help them foster daily exercise. That's a good elixir for good rest and relaxation. And absolutely, we're going to talk about that in more detail in a whole other podcast.
And I think for me, I relax, right? If I take a walk, and I've realized by walking the dog with the kids and not waiting until after they go to bed, it makes a difference. Like, they love it. They relax, and it's a good, yeah, it's perfect to lean into that. So I love it. That's such good information. What I love about it is that it's also important. I mean, like, it's, yes, very helpful as a parent for our kids, but it's also helpful for us as the parents for how do we get better sleep? Because that's something you hear a lot of parents talk about, right? Is how, you know, kids steal your sleep. Well,
let me ask you a question. When you or your family is going through a tough, difficult situation, you've been through some difficult situations as a family, you've moved a lot, you've had a lot of change up in various things, right? Mm-hmm. It goes back to the worry section of feel and think. Do your kids bring their worries to bed? Can you tell that if they're worried, they're not sleeping as well, or has that not been a factor?
You know, at 4 and 6, I feel like it's a little harder to tell right now. I feel like I can actually see it a little bit more in the 4-year-old because he's pretty expressive and it comes more through his behavior, how he's acting up right before bed has usually been like some sort of reflection of something that was encountered earlier that day. But we really haven't done the worry aspect yet.
And sometimes some kids are more warriors than others, right?
Yes. Yes.
You need to let them help them let it go.
Yes. You know,
the worries will still be there tomorrow. We can recollect them, but we need this time for them not to be there. And I think that can become a habit. You know that you can train your brain, right? To focus on
neuroplasticity. Learn that from you.
Not just neuroplasticity. The whole idea that we can train our brains to calm. Right? To focus on other people and service to them. And we can focus on gratitude. We can focus on all kinds of ways to use our breath to calm ourselves. Mm-hmm. One of the things I like is to maybe take a worry box and have them write down their worries, or you can write it for them or draw a picture, put it in the worry box well before bedtime and say, let's leave it here.
I love that.
See that you have that. I was talking to a little kid in my practice, a new patient to us, and I was talking to him about his sleep and his worries. And he was a competitive little soccer player, and he gets very worried. And I said, well, what about establishing a worry, you know, making a worry box? And then at the end, he goes, you're a dentist, right? Why are you talking to me about all this stuff on sleep and worry? I said, do you like it? He said, yeah, I like it. It was really cute. But anyway, just try to find that way that we can, you know, try to put those things aside and then establish bedtime routines that are about relaxation, forward thinking, and thinking about, you know, opportunities that we might have for tomorrow to be kind to someone or to do a favor for someone, or what are some of the things that bring positive energy into their life rather than let's reflect back on today and the worry that you're having. That's an awful time to be thinking about the worry. It's more important to be future focused, which is the, you know, the present moment about being here now and, you know, this wonderful moment and what wonderful opportunities we're going to have to look forward to tomorrow, and how, or gratitude, what we're grateful for. So some of those things, rather than this is the only time I've had with my child and I want to hear about what happened at school today. And I know you were really upset. I'm sorry we got that call from your teacher. Let's talk about it. Not necessarily the best time to do it.
Totally agree.
So.
Well, if you have any questions for Dr. Susan Maples on the topic of sleep and you are watching on Instagram and Facebook, please feel free to drop those in the comments. And thank you for joining us on an incredible episode. One of my favorites.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a huge area. You start to see your kids sleep better and you start to see their mood turn around and they're, you know, they're not struggling with, you know, weight gain and depression and all of that. It just makes you feel so great. You're like, you really got to the bottom of it. I'll end by saying this. If I'm going bowling, what pin do I want to hit? I'm bowling right down the center because I want the king pin that knocks out 9 other pins. If you can tackle a sleep problem with your child, you literally are tackling at least 9 other big things that are showing up in their life. So I know that's a big challenge, but I'm here for you. So if you have any personal you know, desire to get to the bottom of something where we haven't covered in the book or you haven't learned on this podcast, we'll be bringing on more experts on sleep to talk later, but certainly feel free to reach out to me and I look forward to talking to you.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Thanks. Bye everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent Podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible or wherever you prefer to buy your books. Bye for now.